A horrific bombing hits Sri Lanka. How do we respond?
This is Timothy Talks Today, brought to you by Timothy Talks Podcast, where we impact today's news and events with a biblical worldview.
Welcome back to Timothy Talks Today. My name is Daniel Pentamone, and I'm doing a solo episode today. Last week, we talked about a church building, the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. And today we're going to be talking about another church building because it is also on the news, actually several church buildings. As you're probably aware, some bombings went off in the nation of Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday. So we're talking about Easter Sunday 2019, April 21st, and around 253 confirmed dead. It's assumed that that number is going to go up. But this is obviously a pretty significant bombing, and we need to think through how do we respond as Christians. So let's just delve right in. First question that may be on your mind is what happened? I know I had heard about this bombing, but hadn't really done a lot of research on it for a while, so if you're in that same position, well, this is what happened on April 21st in Sri Lanka, and for those of you who aren't maybe quite as familiar with the geography, that's right off the coast of India. But Islamic terrorists attacked suicide bombers, at least three churches and three major hotels experienced bombs, and then a number of other smaller explosions happened at different places. Some of them happened after police came and began to do some investigations. And there's even said that there's a threat of continuing explosions at religious places of worship. So Christians have been told not to gather at their church on Sundays. Muslims have been told not to go to the mosque because there's concerns that further explosions may follow, that maybe not all of the suicide bombers are finished with their attacks. So the deadliest explosion occurred at St. Sebastian's Church, and at least 110 people died at that place. The attacks have been linked to ISIS. ISIS claimed responsibility, the Islamic State, which, if you've been following the news recently, the Islamic State located in Iraq and Syria really basically lost all of its territory in the last year or so. A few little fragments, hangers-on, that have happened to remain and resist Western armies. But for the most part, ISIS is no more as an entity with a geography. But that is not to say that ISIS is without a presence. ISIS remains a major threat in the world. ISIS has franchised, and we'll talk about this in a bit, but ISIS has franchised and gone all over the world, and they continue to carry out terrorist attacks. So ISIS has claimed responsibility. It is assumed that ISIS has done this. And over 70 people have been involved in the investigation, have been questioned by the police. So it's possible that a lot of people were in the know that this was going to happen. At least eight suicide bombers, possibly more than eight suicide bombers involved. And they also, in addition to that deadliest attack at St. Sebastian's Church, they also attacked the shrine of St. Anthony's Church and the Zion Evangelical Church. Now, Christians are about 10% of the population, actually under 10% of the population of Sri Lanka, so it's not a primarily Christian nation by any means. So this was obviously a very targeted attack, targeting Christians, trying to intimidate Christians in what they believe. One of the saddest things for me as I was doing a little bit of research on what was happening in Sri Lanka was the story of the Zion Evangelical Church. Based on some of the reports that I heard, the suicide bomber had wanted to get into the church building because he was pretending to be filming, but they said there's a service going on right now, so you can't go into the building. So rather than blowing himself up in the building, and in a sense we can be thankful because that probably would have resulted in even more casualties, but still very sad, rather than blowing himself up inside of this service, he blew himself up in the courtyard, which killed a number of children who were going, who were on a break from their Sunday school. So you just think of that. That's just heartbreaking to hear of this, an evangelical church in Sri Lanka, and to think of those families and what is involved with a suicide bomber blowing himself up and killing children of Christians. That's such a sad thing. And obviously there are many people hurting, many people saddened, distraught over this occurrence. So as Christians, how do we think of something like this? Obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is just the evil of what this is. And the Bible talks about this. We use the term as Christians, the term total depravity of man, that man is totally depraved, that we are evil to our core. Without God, every one of us is evil to our core. That doesn't mean that we all act out the most evil that we can. But that is to say that apart from God, we as humans are evil. We are opposed to God, and that can express itself in many ways. And in some cases, it expresses itself in the most horrific forms. That's obviously what's going on today. The depravity that we see in the world is evident in things like the suicide bombings in Sri Lanka. Because until you begin to notice this, depravity is just a word. It's a theological doctrine. It maybe doesn't make a lot of sense. Maybe you just believe it because you're told to, because the Bible says it. But you have to link depravity with what you're seeing going on. This is theology being played out. The Bible tells us that this is what human nature is like, and we're seeing it, that humans are capable of terrible, terrible things, and that is the evil that we see. So just a heartbreaking situation. And obviously this is highlighting the evil of the Islamic State. Now, like I said, the Islamic State has franchised itself. So they've basically been defeated in terms of having a geographical area that they can control. And when they did have a geographical area, it was a horrible, horrible thing. The world has heard about many of the atrocities of the Islamic State. But rather than giving up, they're continuing the fight. Now, instead of joining them by going to their geographical location, Islamic State is saying, join us by doing attacks like these in different parts of the world. And then they contact terrorist organizations in different parts of the world and say, join us and we'll provide you funding. And so we're seeing this in places like Nigeria, places like the Philippines, even, I heard, places like the Democratic Republic of the Congo. These places in different parts of the world where there are already terrorist groups, and now they are linking themselves to the Islamic State. And so the Islamic State is growing in some ways in its influence, not directly, but indirectly, by making allies of these other terrorist organizations. It's a terrible thing, and as Christians, we are more than justified in recognizing the evil of an institution like this. Besides the evil of it, there's the sadness of it. This is a terribly sad situation. And you know, the Bible does talk about trials, tribulations, and we're told to be prepared for them, but I don't know if we always are prepared for these things. How do you prepare for something like this? The level of grief, the level of tragedy that's involved in a suicide bombing. I mean, I know for myself, I'm not prepared for that. The people that I know, I don't think they're prepared for that. I don't know how you can be prepared for it. And yet, as best we can, we're supposed to at the least be prepared for this, that our life in this world is short. It's temporary, and it's filled with sorrows and sadnesses. If you're expecting your life in this world to be a time of just unending joys and excitements and great times, you're going to be disappointed. And that isn't even just true for Christians. It's true of everyone. Because of the human nature, because of who we are as frail, powerless humans, we have to be prepared for a life that isn't perfect. Indeed, sometimes a life that's racked by terrible sorrows. But as Christians especially, we realize, and here we see this especially because Christians were targeted specifically, but as Christians, we're called to a life that sometimes involves great suffering for the cause of the gospel. Now, I want to be careful right here to distinguish, because when I say for the cause of the gospel, the sad news is that not everyone in these bombings, not all of the victims of these bombings, were people who had a genuine relationship with Jesus Christ. I mentioned three of these churches, one of them being an evangelical church, at least by the name of it, two of them apparently Roman Catholic churches. So we can be sorrowful for everyone who was involved, but not all of those who were involved and who were victims of this horrific attack actually had a genuine relationship with Jesus Christ. There's the three hotels. That doesn't seem to be a religious affiliation at all. And then some of these churches, the Roman Catholic Church, as we've said before, sadly, the church as an institution does not have the gospel. That's not to say that there aren't perhaps some who are still believers in it, but we have to just recognize that. So our sadness and our condolences go to all of them, and We can and we should be heartbroken when we hear news like this. But at the same time, recognizing these trials and tribulations come on everyone, but they come on Christians in particular. And that's what our Savior has promised us in this world. Now, at this point, I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in a moment. Now, at this point, I'm going to take a quick break and just hang on. I'll be right back. If you're enjoying the Timothy Talks podcast show today, consider doing us a favor and give us a positive rating on iTunes. This way, other people can hear the show too. And if you have a friend or family member who would enjoy this content, please pass it on. You can send them to www.timothytalkspodcast.com, or they can subscribe through their favorite podcast app. Welcome back. I'm talking about the Sri Lanka bombings on Easter Sunday 2019. And like I mentioned, major explosions, a number of major explosions. This is evil. This is depravity. We need to recognize it for what it is. And then as believers, we can have sadness. We are actually called to sympathize with those who are going through troubles and difficulties. And especially when we think about the fact that these are Christians, some of these people, believers who are suffering as a result, believers who are victims, and believers who have lost family members, believers who have lost friends. And by all means, our sympathy should extend to these people. But one other topic that I think is major and that we need to consider in this is the fact that this is an Islamic extremist attack. And as we're seeking to develop a biblical worldview, which should be the goal of every Christian, to be able to think through things from a biblical worldview, it's not wrong to stop and give some pause to this idea that this is Islamic extremism. Now, I remember, and maybe some of you remember this as well, but if you think back to the Iraq War, a number of years ago, because that war has been dragging on, or was dragging on for quite some time, and we're still to some extent involved in that whole situation over there in Iraq. But you think about that situation, maybe you remember when suicide bombings first began to occur, and they were not common things. If a suicide bomber killed two or three people, that was considered like world news. I don't know if you remember that or not, but I can remember this time when these suicide bombings, the first ones, were very significant and the world was looking at them. And then it turned into a situation where the suicide bombings were becoming more and more frequent, and they sort of became like second-level headlines. And now suicide bombings in different places of the world are sometimes they're like so common that they're almost like third-level headlines, if they're even on the front page, because this stuff is happening so often, and we've become accustomed to something that just 20 years ago, we were not accustomed to at all. Now you have to kill hundreds of people to be able to become a front-line headline. And you can see that also with different shootings in the United States. I mean, there are shootings practically every day nowadays in the United States. You can't just kill people wantonly in the United States and have that be a major event. You have to kill like scores of people, tens, maybe hundreds of people to become something really significant. Or you have to go to a place like a church or a school building and shoot people there or do things like that. So my point with all this is we are becoming so desensitized to violence, but it is all around the world and it's also here in America. So this, though, the fact that there was so much coverage of this means this was a significant event. Again, 253 people confirmed dead, and that number is expected to go up. Now, originally, the body count had been 359 people, and they did revise that number down. So praise God, the number wasn't as high as was first expected. But still, you think of that. 253 people, that's over 250,000 people died in these explosions. And not only that, but there's a concern that there may be more explosions to follow. So it's just a very sad situation. But then the question comes up, why these attacks? Now, we have this word that we use, and it's a somewhat controversial word, but it's called Islamic extremism. It's controversial because some people would say, well, you can't link Islam with Islamic extremism, or with extremism in general. And the argument goes like this. Islam does not promote these things. These are extremists who have taken Islam to a fever pitch, and they're going beyond what Islam teaches. Now, is there truth to this argument or not? And I would say yes and no. Here's the fault. The first fault is thinking that Islam is not at all associated with this, and that's actually not true. These are people who are going to the Quran and who are going to Islam, and they are finding justification. Now, whether that justification should be found or not in Islam is a case to be debated, but they are finding justification in Islam. So to try to make this extremism a purely secular thing is not fair. On the other hand, I'm going to also say that you can't link extremism and Islam one-to-one. And here's why. Because the majority of Muslims would reject this. In fact, the majority of Muslims are concerned about things happening like this. I've been in Muslim countries. A great number of Muslims would reject these things. Now, at this point, we can ask a question. Is that because they're not true Muslims, or is that because they are true Muslims? And again, this is a question that's mired in controversy. Is true Islam inherently militant and extremist? And that's a question that I don't personally feel that I'm qualified to answer. I've not done enough studying, and it's a very complicated subject. But what we can say definitely is that there is a level of toleration, a level of almost liberalism that has entered Islam in the last 100 years. Obviously, Islam has a history, which some people would describe it as very bloody, other people would say it's somewhat bloody, but it does have a history of violence. Again, should it be that way or not can be debated. But the point is that in the last 100 years, not only Islam, but every religion in the world practically has seen an introduction of a liberalizing element to it, so that Muslims are now much more content to live in multicultural societies, just like Christians are much more content to live in multicultural societies than they were, say, 200 or 300 years ago. Every religion has had to adapt to multiculturalism and to different people living in different places who are not of that religion, of that place. So as a result, Muslims have, in general, become more tolerant, per se. And again, my point is not to delve into whether or not that is the true Islam. I think you could even have a discussion of, is there such a thing as a true Islam? But that's probably beyond the discussion for today. My point is this. Extremism and Islam are linked together, but there's not a one-to-one correlation. So we should hold extremism responsible for wherever it's going to get its doctrines. And we should certainly say that Islam could be involved in that. On the other hand, we should not pull away from our Muslim neighbors, pull away from our Muslim co-workers, anyone who's a Muslim, and be afraid of them. That's not the right response as Christians. As Christians, we're called to give the gospel. And I would say, the Muslim that lives next door to you is probably not an extremist. And even if they are, you're still called to the same thing, to share the gospel with them. So from personal experience, I've shared the gospel with many Muslims over the years, and I've often had wonderful conversations with them. That's not to say that we've agreed on things, but that is to say that they're willing to listen to what I have to say, and I've never felt a fear of them. The problem is that in the West, because there is some distance from the Muslim-majority world, that we feel fear as a result of these things, and that fear should not hinder us from sharing the gospel. So don't pull away from Muslims just because this may be an Islamic extremist attack. At the same time, we can recognize that we all need to be security-minded. And this is something that should be very evident to everyone. Be security-minded. We need to be security-minded outside the church, and we need to be security-minded inside the church. So if you are a leader of a church, by all means, think about security. This is not a unspiritual thing, this idea that we should be so removed from the world that we don't even think about threats like this. By no means. Think about security. Be security-minded. Perhaps have a security team or at least some basic plans to prevent excessive threat. Like I said, there's shootings that are going on in the United States, even apart from Islamic extremism in the Middle East or Central Asia or places like that. So every church should be thinking about these things. As a believer in general, there's nothing extra spiritual about not being security-minded. Just pay attention. Situational awareness. I'll tell you this, if you go onto Google and you look up situational awareness, you're going to find out some wonderful things, some really useful things that you can implement to actually begin to change the way that you think when you're in public places. And this is just a common sense step that we should take as we see this sort of violence going on around the world. It's a common sense step for yourself and for your family. So look that up, situational awareness, some valuable things for you to think about. And in general, just recognizing the value of being prepared for things. But in the end, in the final result, we trust in God's sovereignty. God is sovereign over these events. You can be situationally aware, you can be security-minded, and this stuff still happens. In the end, God is sovereign. That's not an easy doctrine. That's not something that I'm going to go and I'm going to tell the people who have suffered this in a light way. But at the end of the day, I come back to the reality that even in a world of chaos and turmoil, God knows what is going on. God isn't surprised by these things. We can still trust Him 100% in these situations. It's a sad thing. We grieve with those who have losses in Sri Lanka, but we rejoice in the hope that this world is not our final home. There's a resurrection coming, and it's coming soon. Well, till next time, this is Daniel Pentamone with Timothy Talks. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to Timothy Talks Today, brought to you by Daniel Pentamone and Matthew Risher. Join us for our regular podcast every Monday.